You know, there's a commercial I often hear on the radio. It's an advertisement for a plumbing company. If you think about it, if you've heard it, you know it. The boss is on the phone. He's talking to his employee named Richard. You see, Richard hadn't showed up for work quite yet. You know, it's pretty late in the day. And so Richard tells his boss, "Well, I've had a plumbing problem." And you know how plumbers are. And so the boss says, "Yeah, I understand. The plumbers are always late. They say they'll show at this time, then they'll show later and later. And then 5 o'clock, they finally show up." But in this case, of course, the plumber was not late. And Richard was out playing hooky. He was out fishing. The spot is funny, you know, but the reality of what Richard was doing, making the excuses, and he was lying to his boss, wasn't he? That's really what he was doing. And don't we constantly hear excuses in our world today? You know, you think about the excuses the kids give for not having homework done. You know, used to be the dog ate it. Dad took it. I accidentally picked up my stuff and took it to work with him. The computer crashed. That's a popular one, too. There's also many excuses why people are late to work or late to some other function. There's some websites online, if you look at them, and some of them are quite amusing. You have the normal, of course. You have the traffic. You know, that's understandable. You have the alien abductions, which is pretty common. But for some reason, the aliens always bring them back after work or something like that. You have one, I read one, where it had a bear attack. You know, the bear attacked his car, so he couldn't go anywhere. The funniest one I read was this guy said his dog buried his car. It's either a big dog or a small car. And believe it or not, there are actually websites that you can go to that will help you have a, quote, credible excuse. Help you write one, you know, to get out of the trouble you've had. Again, we know the politics go on constantly. The news is constantly filled with politicians. What do? They promise us every year, you know, every 2 years, if you elect me, I promise I will this, 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 this. And they spend the next 2 to 4 years, what? Giving excuses. Well, I can't do this because I don't have this, or I can't do this. Next time, we'll do it. You hear that all the time, don't you? Always, it seems like, constantly. Mankind, from its very beginning, has been using excuses, giving excuses, and using excuses of what not to do and not to do right. Today, I want to look at some of the excuses that we all use and think about the end result of what is going to happen to them. The end result can be our destruction. So the title of the sermon today is No Excuses. No Excuses. Ben Frankel is quoted saying, quote, "He that is good for making excuses is seldom good for anything else." It's true, isn't it? People you know who give you all these excuses, they usually can't do much. Again, let's look at some of the reasons that people use these excuses. And I want to look at this from our point of view, a Christian point of view. Also, how mankind uses excuses to do what they want to do, and most of the time to excuse themselves from doing what they should do, that is, in obeying God. So the first excuse you often hear is, "It's not my fault. It's not my fault." Go back to Genesis chapter 3. This one got started pretty early. Genesis chapter 3, verse 9. It's the one our first parents used. So let's go back and consider the very first time it was used. Genesis chapter 3, in verse 9, earlier in Genesis 3, we realized that Satan had deceived Eve into partaking of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And Adam took the fruit as well. But of course, Adam was not deceived. Adam did it. Start verse 9. "Then the Lord God called to Adam and said to him, 'Where are you?' And he said, 'I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself.' And he said, 'Who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree which I have commanded you that you should not eat?'" Now think about that. Even, you know, obviously God knew when he asked his question. So what did Adam say? "Then the man said, 'The woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree and I ate.'" Adam, what did he do? "It's not my fault, God." You know, really indicate it was really kind of God's fault, if you think about that. You know, what did he say? The woman that you gave me. I didn't ask for her, God. You gave her to me. So really, it's kind of your fault. It's really not my fault. Eve didn't do much better, verse 13. And the Lord God said to the woman, what is this that you've done? And the woman said, the serpent deceived me, and I ate. There again, what did the woman say? Well, you know, that serpent that, who made the serpent? That you made, God, deceived me, and I ate. So really, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. It's always someone else's fault, isn't it? And those of us who have children or grandchildren know that the case as well, don't we? You know, it's not my fault my brother got hit in the head with a baseball bat. I was swinging it around. He just got his head in the way. Or maybe not quite that bad. But you know what I mean. Those things happen. It's not my fault my brother did this or he got hurt. Cain did the same thing, didn't he? What did he say when God asked him about his brother? Hey, I don't know what happened to him. I don't know what happened to Abel. Am I my brother's keeper? You know, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. Has anyone ever hear or do you remember the term the Twinkie defense? The Twinkie defense? 1979, San Francisco, there was a murder trial. A lawyer for the defendant of the client said that his mental capacity had been diminished, and part of the reason was called all the junk food he ate. Now, a reporter there referred to it as the Twinkie defense. You see, it wasn't his fault. Too much sugar. Too much sugar. Even though his lawyer only mentioned the word Twinkie one time, the term Twinkie defense has become synonymous with defense of things that are way out there. I think there was one man who climbed a tree and fell down out of the tree and hurt himself, and he sued, again, too many Twinkies. So again, one of the psychiatrists at this particular trial testified, quote, if not for the aggravating fact of junk food, the homicides might not have even taken place. You see? It's not my fault. In this case, the Twinkies made me do it. And it's been used many times. So, again, that's probably one of the most common excuses we all use, and we all do that, because, again, what's one of the hardest things for a person to admit? That it's our fault and that we did something wrong. Extremely hard, isn't it? We all know it's true because we're all like that. We all do it at times. Let's go to point number two, the second excuse often used. To shift the blame to others. To shift the blame to others. We're going to Genesis chapter 32. Genesis chapter 32, and we're starting verse 1. Again, I venture to say that most of us, if not all of us, have used this excuse as well. You know, it's everybody else is doing it. Everybody in the school's doing it. Everybody's in the office is doing it. Why can't I do it too? You know, as our mother would say, if everybody jumped off the bridge, would you do it too? You know, Exodus chapter 32, starting in verse 1. This is the account of Aaron and the golden calf. Now, Moses had gone up to the Mount Sinai to get instructions. And they left Aaron in charge. And let's read Exodus 32, verses 1 through 7. Now, when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountains, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, come, let us make gods that shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. Aaron said to them, break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me. So all the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears, and they brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with a great engraving tool, and made a golden calf. Then they said, this is your God, O Israel, which brought you out of the land of Egypt. So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it, and Aaron proclaimed a proclamation, saying, tomorrow is a feast to the Lord. Then they rose up early on the next day, offered burnt offerings, and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. And the Lord said to Moses, go get down, for your people whom you brought up out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. Now, for some reason, it doesn't really say why, Aaron allowed the people to talk him into making an idol. You know, this came not long after, if you think about it, where God had spoken to them and given the Ten Commandments from Mount Sinai. It wasn't that long after that. And we are told, Aaron, what did he do? He personally fashioned the idol, didn't he? Aaron, though, let's read verses 21 through 24. Aaron acts like, well, you know, he didn't do it. Verses 21 through 24. And Moses said to Aaron, what did this people do to you that you have brought such a great sin upon them? You know, did they have something on you that you blackmailed you? So Aaron said, do not let the anger of my Lord become hot. You know the people, they are set on evil. They said to me, make us gods that shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what was become of him. And I said to them, whoever has anything gold, let him break it off. So they gave it to me, and I cast it into the fire, and this calf pops out. Pops out. So you know, Aaron's like, well, you know, it's not my deal. I don't know what happened. He didn't have anything to do with it. They just took the gold and threw it in this fire, and out popped this calf. You know, he didn't take responsibility at all for it, did he? In fact, if you go back at verse 22, what did he say? He said, you know the people, they are set on evil. Whose fault is it? It's someone else's fault. He places the blame to them. You know those people, they're always set on evil. It's not my fault. He put the blame to someone else. Instead of admitting his sin, he shifted the blame to other people. Again, he's act like, well, I just, you know, just come out that way. And again, all of us have done that, shift the blame. It's a pretty easy excuse we've used. Let's go to another excuse that people use. Another excuse people use is the fear of what others think. Again, this is the excuse from doing what's right. The fear of what others think. Look in 1 Samuel 13. Look at a couple examples from Israel's first king. 1 Samuel 13, starting verse 6. 1 Samuel verse 13. Saul, he did quite a bit of this at times because of what he feared of the people. 1 Samuel 13, we'll read starting verse 6 and read verse 6 through 13. Again, set the stage. Saul and the Israelites were gathered together to fight the Philistines. Philistines had a huge army, and the Israelites were scared, and some of them were leaving. Starting verse 6. And when the men of Israel saw that they were in danger, for the people were distressed, then the people hid in caves and thickets and rocks and holes and in pits. And some of the Hebrews crossed over the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, he was still in Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. So they were scared. And we waited 7 days according to the time set by Samuel. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So Saul said, bring a burnt offering and a peace offering here to me. And he offered up the burnt offering. Now when it happened, as soon as he had finished presenting the burnt offering, that Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him and to greet him. And Samuel said, what have you done? Saul said, I saw the people were scattered from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines had gathered together at Mishmash. Then I said, the Philistines will now come down upon me at Gilgal, and I've not made a supplication to the Lord. Therefore I felt compelled and offered a burnt offering. And Samuel said to Saul, you've done foolishly, for you've not kept the commandments of the Lord your God, which he had commanded you, for now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. You know, Saul didn't have the authority to offer up that burnt offering, did he? The people were leaving, and he was afraid that the people were thinking. So he says he compelled, what the word means, he, quote, forced himself. Didn't want to do it, but he forced himself to do that. And what was the end result of that? Verse 14. But now your kingdom shall not continue, For the Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. Let's turn to chapter 15. Read another chapter 15, starting verse 18. Another account where Saul used this excuse. Again, he used this excuse to disobey what God had told him. Through Samuel, told him what to do. He'd been told to utterly destroy all the Amalekites because they had ambushed Israel as they had left Egypt. So again, Saul got together, his army, and went to destroy them. Start in verse 18. Saul didn't do exactly what he was told. Verse 18. This is after Samuel had come. Samuel said, "Now the Lord has sent you on a mission and said, go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed. Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of the Lord?" And Saul said to Samuel, "But I have obeyed the voice of the Lord and gone on the mission which the Lord sent me and brought back Agag, the king of Amalekites, and utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the plunder and the sheep and the oxen and the best of things which should have been utterly destroyed to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal." He kind of shifted the blame there as well. Saul said he did this. Why did he do this? Verse 24 tells us exactly why he did it. "Saul said to Samuel, 'I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your words.' Why? Because I feared the people and obeyed their voice." Saul feared the people. He didn't fear disobeying God, did he? He was more concerned with what the people thought than what God had told him to do. More concerned with what people thought. You know, you hear that excuse. Other people use that excuse. I had a relative. You know, they used to come out and whenever they come out on the weekends, he'd sit down and read the plain truth. Loved the plain truth. Thought Mr. Armstrong was truly a preacher of righteousness. Actually, he said he believed everything Mr. Armstrong wrote, but he would never order the magazine. He'd always come out and read it when he was out there. He never ordered it. Why? Because of his wife. His wife didn't have the same opinion of Mr. Armstrong as he had. And he was afraid of what it would do and what she would do to him if he ordered the magazine to come at his house. Again, he allowed someone else because what he feared them instead of fearing God and what he should have been. He used that excuse. I even heard him tell me that. That was the reason he wouldn't do it. Again, I know most of us here probably heard those excuses before. Keep from obeying the truth. You've heard people say, "Well, what would other people think of me? What would my wife think of me? What would my business associates think of me or my relatives think of me if I started doing what the scripture says? If I start keeping that Jewish Sabbath day, if I start keeping those Jewish holy days, what would my business partners think? What would my relatives think?" Again, they allow social pressure and what other people think and to use that as an excuse not to obey God. They fear people more than they fear God. It's something we all have to be very careful with. We don't allow that to go. Again, these excuses that I'm giving, I'm confident that all of us have used the vast majority of them one time or another. And the chances are, if we're not careful, we'll use them again in the future. Let's go to the next excuse that people use. Excuse number 4. I'm not good enough. I am not good enough. Usually this is the excuse people give when they don't want to do a task or make a certain commitment. "Well, I'm not able to do this task you give me because, you know, I'm not good with people. I'm not good with numbers. I can't do this or I can't do that." So they give an excuse why they don't want to do it. And this excuse, actually, there are several places in the scripture we're going to go to that this particular excuse was used. A good example, let's go back to Exodus chapter 4. Good examples there where God talked to Moses Exodus at the burning bush. Exodus chapter 4. And we'll start in verse 13. If you remember the account, Moses went and said, "Hey, there's this bush up there burning. I got to check this out. What is it?" And when he got there, God was giving him instructions what he wanted Moses to do. And what was Moses' reaction? Exodus chapter 4, verse 10. "Then Moses said to the Lord, 'O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant. But I am slow of speech and slow of tongue.' So the Lord said to him, 'Who has made man's mouth? Or who has made the mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? Have not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall say.' But he said to him, 'O my Lord, please send by the hand of whomever else you may send.'" Moses said, "I can't speak well." Some people thought he may have stammered or something like that. But he did. Whatever the case was, "I can't speak well. I can't do this. I can't be your spokesman. I'm not good enough. I kind of like it out here in the desert where it's nice, quiet, peaceful," which he probably did. You know, he said, "Send," what did he say? "Send anybody but me, because I'm not good enough." But, you know, God did convince Moses, didn't he? And Moses did a fantastic job. He did what he's supposed to. You know what? God wouldn't accept that excuse from Moses, would he? He didn't say, "Okay, Moses, you're right. You really can't speak very well. I'll find somebody else." God didn't accept that excuse, did he? Not at all. Go to Judges chapter 6. Judges chapter 6. And we'll read verse 12 through 16. Judges chapter 6, verses 12 through 16. The same excuse was used in this particular incident. This is the incident of Gideon. This is where the angel of God appeared before Gideon. God had been allowing the Midianites to punish Israel because of their disobedience. Judges chapter 6, starting in verse 12. Judges 6, verse 12. "And the angel of the Lord appeared to him," it's Gideon, "and said to him, 'The Lord is with you, mighty man of valor.' And Gideon said to him, 'O my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? Were all his miracles which our fathers told about, saying, Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hand of the Midianites.' Then the Lord said to him, 'Go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you?' So he said to him, 'O my Lord, how can I save Israel? Indeed, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's household.'" You know, despite the fact, when he first talked to Gideon, what he said, "You mighty man of valor." Gideon didn't have any confidence, did he? You know, he said, how can I save Israel? You know, my family's not much. I'm not much of even in my family. I'm the least of the least. They don't get any lower than me. And that's the way he felt. You know, I'm just a nobody. How can I do it? You know? Again, God didn't accept that excuse from Gideon, did it? He did not accept that excuse from Gideon. It took a little help to get him along, but eventually Gideon did what God said and had a mighty deliverance for the nation of Israel through Gideon. God doesn't accept that excuse that I am not good enough. And believe it or not, we're going to Luke chapter 5, starting in verse 3. Luke 5, verse 3. One of the 12 apostles tried to use that same excuse. Luke chapter 5, verses 3 and 8, 3 through 8. "It happened when after Jesus Christ told this man who was fishing off the shore, where to cast his net into the water to catch the fish." Luke chapter 5, verse 3 through 8. "Again, Simon Peter and James and John were fishing when Jesus got in one of the boats to be able to better teach the people." Verse 3. "Then he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's, and asked him to put out a little from the land. And he sat down and taught the multitudes from the boat. When he had stopped speaking, he said to Simon, "Launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch." But Simon answered and said to him, "Master, we have toiled all night and caught nothing. Nevertheless, at your word, I will let down the net." And when they had done this, they caught a great number of fish, and their net was breaking. So they signaled to their partners on the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled both boats so that it began to sink. Verse 8. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell down at Jesus' knee and said, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." Depart from me. Peter was given an excuse there, wasn't it? I'm a sinful man. I'm not good enough even to be around you. He tried to use that excuse, again, because he was a sinner. But he did change his mind, and God used him mightily, didn't he? Again, God doesn't accept that excuse that I'm not good enough. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, and we'll start in verse 26. And let's think about you and me. Have we ever thought about that, that we're not good enough to be called into the body of Jesus Christ? Yeah, I have. And I'm pretty sure probably most of us have, that we're not good enough to be called into the body of Jesus Christ. And let's face it, we're not. We're just not. There's no one, quote, good enough. But God didn't call us because we were good enough. He called us, again, to glorify his name. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26. We know these scriptures. "For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world put to shame the things which are mighty, and the base things of the world, and the things which are despised God has chosen, and the things which are not to bring to nothing the things that are." Why? "That no flesh should glory." You know, again, we're not good enough. We're not good enough. You know, at one time I was talking to an individual and I said, you know, and perhaps you've thought the same thing, well, you know, if I'd been God, I wouldn't have called me. Because, you know yourself, right? You know who you are. You know your faults. You know your difficulties. And this particular individual, who is considerably wiser than I, he said, "Who are you to question the judgment of God? Who are you? God is the one who decides whom he wants to call. It's not for you to decide. It's God to decide." And I thought, yeah, you're right. I'll shut my mouth up. You know. So I just don't say it anymore. But again, we all know. We know ourselves. We know who we are. Again, we're not good enough to be in the church. You want to say it that way. And as a little side note on this, I'd like to thank all those, especially the young people in our little variety show we had back in January. You know, we enjoyed it tremendously. There were mistakes made in the presentations at times. But, you know, especially those who are younger, they didn't worry about being good enough, did they? They were aware to serve, to share with each and every one of us, and set a good example to all of us. You know, yes, we make mistakes. You know, but the opportunity to serve as they did is a tremendous blessing for all of us, and we do appreciate it. And I just want to thank those who did that. I'd like to read a quote from an author, Roy Bennett. "Maturity is when you stop complaining and making excuses in your life. You realize everything that happens in your life is a result of previous choices you have made. Start making new choices to change your life." Very true. And let's go to the next excuse that's used quite often. Excuse number 5, it's not that important. It's not that important. You hear this excuse made when people get the priorities messed up. "I don't have time to spend time with my family. You know, I'm too busy. My work, my social life, my sports, my whatever the case may be." You know, people don't say it, but their actions show that, yeah, What's more important, the family or my, doing my things? It's the same excuse that used in not obeying God. We're going to Matthew 13, and we're going to start in, we're going to read a couple verses, verse 7 and verse 22. The gentleman in the sermonette went to Luke's version of this. Let's go to Matthew's versions of this, of the sower. I thought, well, okay, he's going to take my scriptures there, but he didn't. Matthew chapter 13, talking about the sower as well. Again, ties in well with the sermonette. Matthew 13, verse 7. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them. Verse 22, the answer to what they're talking about. Now he who received the seed among the thorns is he who hears the word, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becomes unfruitful. You see this, you know, I have more, people will say, I have more important things to do. I don't have time to put the truth first. All of us know people like that. They get excited. They hear the truth. They get excited. They read the scriptures. They're all excited. They get understanding. They read literature. They may have started attending church. And they get pressure from other people, pressure from their boss, pressure from family members. And they begin to drift away. And sometimes it can take years and years. I like to talk to about a man that my wife and I knew back when we were teenagers, about 1,000 years ago. He was a very, very warm, generous, wonderful man. He was a great guy. He could talk. He was, you know, old. He was in his 40s or 50s. You know, he's really old. But he could talk to teenagers, you know, and he had no problem. He enjoyed talking to teenagers. He had one problem. His wife did not attend church. She wanted absolutely nothing to do with church. So if he went to the feast, at that time, if it was St. Petersburg for the most part, or Jekyll, she would go with him. Otherwise, she just would not go. She had no desires of vacation for her, so she just wouldn't go. Now, our first feast as a married couple, we went to Tucson, Arizona, and he was there as well. And we spent most of the time with him, enjoying company with him. He was like, we were like his adopted children during the feast. It was great because he had all the second tithe, and we didn't have a whole lot. So he didn't mind spending it, and we didn't mind it being spent on us as well. I mean, it was, we really enjoyed it. He was a very nice, a very wonderful guy. We really enjoyed his company. And but eventually the cares of this world got him. You know, when the, actually it was with pressure from his wife. You know, when things happened in 1995, he quit. His excuse was, I no longer have to do those things that separate me from my wife. He let the cares of the world get to him. And you know, it's not like it was 2 years, 3 years in the church. He'd probably been in the church 30 years or more. All that time. Again, it can get us if we're not careful. It really can. That disappointed both Kitty and I because, again, he was a very, very wonderful, loving, kind, outgoing gentleman. We really, really hated hearing that. Let's go to Luke 14. It's very disappointing to hear that. Luke 14. Again, the cares of the world can get to us. It doesn't happen all the time, or can't happen shortly. It can happen years down the road if we're not careful, if we don't put the first things first. Luke chapter 14, read verses 16 through 20. This is a parable where Jesus Christ talks about a man who prepared a great supper and is ready for his guests to come. But those who he had invited had come up with all these excuses of why they could not come. Again, we can see this parable in the light of the calling of God. Many are chosen, many are called, few are chosen. Luke 14, starting verse 16. And he said to them, a certain man gave a great supper and invited many. And he sent his servants to supper time to say to those who were invited, come, for all things are now ready. But they all with one accord began to make excuses. The first said to him, I bought a piece of ground. I must go and see it. I ask you to have me excused. And the other said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I am going to test them. I ask you to have me excused. And still another said, I have married a wife, therefore I cannot come. Let's look at these excuses these 3 men used. The first one said, look, I bought a piece of property. I got to go see it. In other words, I'm so busy taking care of my things, my property, my whatever the case is, that I don't have the time to do what you say, God. You know, I've got to do the most important things first, and that's taking care of myself. Taking care of my property, and I don't really have time, so, you know, please excuse me, because I don't have time to mess with it. The second one said he bought some oxen, was going out to try them or test them out. And it had to be done, as you notice, right then. Couldn't wait. Had to be done right then. That was his excuse. Again, many people use this excuse to follow God. Well, I've got, again, too many important things to do now. They just can't wait. I've got to do them now. Business, my business needs me now. I can't afford to take off for the Sabbath. I can't afford to take off for the holy days. Or I'm really, really needed at my job. And my boss, he won't let me have off the Sabbath. They'll fire me. And I can't take the time off, go to the feast days. They'll fire me. First things first. First things first. I knew a man who attended. He was fired, it seemed like, every feast. They say, you go to the feast, don't come back because you don't have a job. I don't know how many times. It must have been 20 times or so he had. But every year he'd come back with a better job. God would bless him every year with a better job. It was difficult for him. And I'm sure on occasion it didn't happen, but I don't know how many times it happened. He would get fired. He put first things first, and he was willing to take it. Whatever that God allowed to happen, again, he was fired. But he didn't give the excuse to God, well, no, business is first. My job is first. Now, the third man said he got married, therefore he couldn't come. It was just like the man I talked about earlier. He put his wife ahead of obedience to God. He put other people, use that excuse, but God will never accept any of those excuses ever from anyone, anyone. Drop down to verse 26. If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and his mother, his wife, children, brothers, sisters, yes, even his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Now, the word hate there means really to love less by comparison. It means that we must love God first and not give excuses, but to love God first, even above our own life. Very difficult, but even above all our own life. All these 3 men in his parable gave putting other things instead of worshiping God, ahead of God. The reality was those things had become what? Those things have become their idols because that's what they put first instead of God. And what did the man who gave the great supper say about those men? Verse 24. I say to you that none of those men who were invited shall taste my supper. None of those men invited will taste my supper. And we know if we put other people or other things instead of obeying God, put them first, we'll never be in the wedding supper, will we? We'll never make it to the wedding supper. We will not be able to enjoy that supper that God, that great supper that God has prepared. We have to put God first. Now let's go to the next excuse people use. Again, these are excuses that people often use so they don't have to be obedient. Number 6, weakness or lack of character. People use weakness or lack of character. Let's go back to Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 20. There's a lot of scriptures in Proverbs, but I'd like to look at one particular aspect of weakness character, and that is laziness. Proverbs chapter 20. Read verse 4. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 4. Proverbs 20, verse 4. The lazy man will not plow because of winter, He will beg during harvest and have nothing. What's the excuse he uses? Well, it's cold outside. It's wet outside. Whatever the case may be, I just can't go out and go to work. I can't plow. So I'll just stay inside where it's nice and warm. End result, you starve. Chapter 22. Again, an excuse that people use. Chapter 22, verse 13. The lazy man says, "There's a lion outside. I shall be slain in the streets." You think about that. You know, what he's saying is, reality is, I can't do anything because there might be some danger out there, what I'm going to do. You know, whatever case I may do. So I'm so afraid, what am I going to do? I'm just going to sit in my house and do nothing. Nothing at all. The unforeseen danger is an excuse that he used not to do a thing. And that's what people use when it comes to obeying God as well. Because, you know, there are unforeseen things that happen when you obey God, isn't there? But we can't allow that laziness or that attitude to affect us. The excuse is also given to other things. Well, I can't go to school. I can't go to school because I might fail. I might not get straight A's. You know, that unforeseen danger. I can't accept a higher position in the company. Why? Well, I might not be able to handle the stress. I might not be able to, you know, handle what they give me. That unforeseen danger. So I'm just going to sit back and not worry about it. Take it easy. Also, I can't do things in the church as well sometimes. Why? Because I might fail. I might fail. You know, I can't give sermonettes. I can't give special music. What if I mess up? Well, welcome to the real world. So you mess up. Who doesn't? There was only one who didn't, right? That's not an excuse. Just because you can't do a perfect job, it's not an excuse not to do things, not to serve. God wants all of us to grow in character. And that means we have to do those things that sometimes we don't necessarily want to do. We have to get out of what they call to get out of our box on occasion. It gets a little uncomfortable at times, doesn't it? We can't be lazy. We can't be fearful. Let's go to Matthew 25. Matthew 25. We can't allow ourselves to get in that position. Again, God puts us in these areas. He puts us there to develop his character in us. He doesn't do it so we can enjoy life smooth and easy all the time. Thankfully, he is merciful to us, but he does put us in fire on occasion, doesn't he? Matthew 25, we'll restart in verse 24. This is the parable of the talents. Now, the talents they were given is an amount of money. Now, I Googled it, and what the source, and I should have wrote down the source. A talent of silver is approximately 100 pounds, worth about $27,000 in today's world. However, a talent of gold is 200 pounds, which is worth approximately $4 million in today's value, $4 million. It doesn't say whether it's silver or gold, but either way, it's a lot of money that was entrusted to these servants, wasn't it? Verse 24. Well, earlier we read the other servants had doubled there. The one who had five talents doubled there. The one who had two talents doubled there. Verse 24. Then he who received one talent came and said. But let's think about even as we read this. Even if it was a talent of silver, how much was it? It's still $27,000. $27,000 he was given. And he who received one talent came and said, "Lord, I knew you're a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours." But his Lord answered and said to him, "You wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I had not sown and I gather where I had not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming I will receive back my own with interest. Therefore, take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. What did he call him? You know, the last money, even though, again, it was $27,000. Again, what did he do with his talent that God gave him? Nothing. You know, I'm scared. He was lazy. He didn't want to do anything. He didn't want to work. Again, I'm afraid. Just like I read in Proverbs, you know, there's a lion in the street. What if I lose the money? What if I do this? I'll just set it there and don't worry about it. Was that excuse acceptable to his master? No, it wasn't, was it? He called him a wicked and a lazy servant, didn't he? What's the end result of this gentleman not using the talent that God had given him? Verse 30. And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. He was called an unprofitable servant. He lost out on the promises his master would have given him. All because why? He was lazy. And he used that for an excuse, didn't he? And why he didn't do anything. Again, that's a warning for us today. What do we do with the talents that God has given each and every one of us? And some people say, well, I don't have any talents. Well, that's not true. Everyone has talents. Some have more. Some have less. If you have less, obviously, God don't expect you to do quite as much as the one who has the huge amount of talents. But certainly God doesn't want to use an excuse and say, well, I don't want to do anything with it because I have so little talents. You're still required, and we're still required as Christians to use our talents. What happens if we don't? We just read there, didn't we? God expects a return on the gifts he gives each and every one of us. He specifically called each and every one of us individually. And guess what? He knew what talents we had when he called us into the church, didn't he? Didn't he know? So he expects us to use those talents, whatever they are, whatever they are. No matter how small or how great, it doesn't really matter. God expects us to use those. I was going to stop at 6 excuses. That's all I'd wrote. And as I was writing this, one of my customers reminded me of a 7th excuse. So I'll hit 7 excuses. This is one a lot of people use to keep from obeying and keeping the Sabbath day. Number 7, ox in the ditch. Ox in the ditch. Luke chapter 14. We'll read verse 5. Luke 14, verse 5. She was talking to me about, we were discussing things, and she was a Southern Baptist, and she was telling me her father worked road construction, Luke 14, verse 5. And many times he had to work on Sunday, you know, because that's just job, you know, you got to do it. So, and he would tell her, oh, don't worry about it, honey. God understands. It's an ox in a ditch. So she reminded me, there's an ox in a ditch. Luke 14, verse 5. And he answered them, saying, which of you having a donkey or an ox that has fallen into a pit will not immediately pull it him out on the Sabbath day? Now, Christ didn't say you could use the excuse not to keep the Sabbath and do whatever you wanted on the Sabbath. Read the context back in verse 2. It was talking about healing a man who had a disease. And behold, there was a certain man before him who had dropsy. And Jesus answering spoke to the lawyers and the Pharisees, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? And they kept silent, and he took him and healed him and let him go. He was talking about healing on the Sabbath, not as an opportunity to do something you want on the Sabbath. You know, and I know, and all of us know, there are times then our ox does fall into the pit on the Sabbath. There are times. It should be a rare thing that it happens. All those situations, most of them can be avoided by planning ahead, like we heard in the sermonette, planning ahead, thinking ahead, making sure that you put a fence around that pit to keep that ox from falling into that pit. A lot of people who want to use this excuse, they grab that ox, drag it to the edge, and kick it in. And then say, hey, my ox is in the ditch. I got to go get it out. That's not the case. Again, it's an excuse that they use to do their own thing on the Sabbath day. You know, something we shouldn't do. Again, we could spend hours talking about excuses, but I think we're about ready to finish up today. But as we start to finish up, I'm going to look at a couple reasons why we should be very careful in how we give excuses. You know, there are legitimate excuses. But a lot of times we just give excuses because we fall short. Excuses can be what? They could be lies. Who's the father of lies? We have to be very careful. So one reason we need, God sees all. God sees everything. There's many places in the scripture that tell us that. Job chapter 34, verse 21. I'll just read it. Job chapter 34, verse 21. Quote, his eyes are on the ways of man. He sees all their steps. God sees it already. Psalms chapter 33, verse 13 through 14. Again, I'll just read it to you. The Lord looks from heaven. He sees all the sons of man. You know, if we give an excuse that's not true, guess what? God already knows, doesn't he? He already knows. You know, what got me to thinking about this sermon was you go and you pray and you talk to God and you say, you know, yeah, I did this. But, and you think, no, you can't give an excuse. Because guess what? It wasn't someone else's fault. It wasn't because of this or because of that. You have to say, no excuses. I did it. You know, forgive me. I did it. Which brings to the second point here. Be honest. Be honest with others. Be honest with yourself. And be honest with God. 2 Samuel chapter 12. We will turn there. 2 Samuel chapter 12. We'll read one verse, verse 13. 2 Samuel 12, verse 13. This is the account where David was confronted by Nathan, where he had sinned with Bathsheba, and he was confronted in what he said. And the thing we're going to think about, what did David, again, 2 Samuel 12, verse 13, what did David say when Nathan said, you are the man? 2 Samuel 12, verse 13. So David said to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. And Nathan said to David, the Lord has put away your sin. You shall not die. David said, I sinned. He didn't give all kinds of excuses. He didn't say, well, yeah, but, you know, she shouldn't have been here. Or, you know, I had a bad day. No, he said, I sinned. It's my fault. I did it. He gave no excuse. Now, granted, it took him a while to get there. It took him quite a while to get there. But when he got there, he admitted, no excuse. I did it. I sinned. God already knew to begin with, didn't he? So be honest. He took full responsibility for his actions. Again, we all need to remember that. When we stumble, and all of us stumble, we know that. There's no one perfect. We come and ask God again for his mercy and his forgiveness. We can't give him excuses to why we either sin by doing something or sin by not doing something. Guess what? He already knows that, doesn't he? Just like when he come and asked Adam, have you eaten of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? He already knew, didn't he? God already knows whether we have or have sinned or not. And God doesn't accept excuses. He does not accept any of our excuses. I'd like to conclude. I'd like to reread the quote from Roy Bennett that I read earlier. However, I want to change one word. I want to change the word maturity to conversion. Quote, conversion is when you stop complaining and making excuses in your life. You realize that everything that has happened in your life is a result of previous choices you have made. Start making new choices and change your life.